May it please the court, my name is Irene Dimkar. I represent the plaintiffs in this class action, and I'm also a parent of one of the plaintiffs. I'd like to address first the plaintiff's motion for a judgment declaring the dress code provision and uniform discipline code 2-5 unconstitutional on their face. The problem with the dress code is the word inappropriate. It prohibits inappropriate words and slogans, and that takes in its sweep protected conduct. Because in all school cases, somebody in charge thought that the conduct was inappropriate. In Tinker, the school administrators thought the armbands were inappropriate.
People bring lawsuits for such trivialities.
The First Amendment rights of school children
is... It's a kid, right? I mean, what? Have they been harmed, these gifties, in some way by this incident?
Yes, Your Honor. The damages issue is not before this court, but we should have been able to bring
How could they be harmed by not being allowed to wear their T-shirt?
They were prohibited from having computer lab, science lab. They were excluded for after-school programs for a number of days. And what is not before the court, I gladly answer this question, but this is what we would have done had we gone to trial. Stephen Herzog, who was in charge of the gifted program, said that they lost a half a year of learning because of all the disruption and because they were distracted. Because this started in February.
Distracted themselves by making such a fuss over nothing.
Well, this went from February to May.
But this is protected by the First Amendment?
Yes, because it's political speech.
This is political speech?
It's a protest. There was an election.
Wait a second. The T-shirt is not the protest. The protest is their anger at the T-shirt being voted down in what they consider to be a rigged election, but the thing itself is surely not a First Amendment, contribution to the marketplace of ideas.
Well, freedom of expression is protected by the First Amendment.
Is your outfit protected by the First Amendment?
Clothing itself, no. But this was...
Any pictorial depiction of any sort is protected by the First Amendment?
No, but that's not the...
By a talentless child?
Your Honor, but that's not the case here. This shirt was worn as a result of an election that the students questioning. They challenged the election.
I understand your complaint about the election. What I don't understand is the proposition that this T-shirt is protected speech.
If it's worn, just like the armbands. Armbands are just pieces of cloth.
No, armbands have, of course, a well-known symbolic significance.
Well, but I think the Supreme Court said at one point, these are just...
This does not have symbolic significance. This is not... An armband is a symbol of mourning, well understood as such. What's this?
In the context of... What happened to these students?
I understand your complaint about the election. Look, you could have an election to choose the school mascot, or the school bird, or something like that. That wouldn't, and you could complain that the election had been rigged. That would be, a complaint. I understand that. Well, what would it have to do with the First Amendment?
What they did was they said, we challenged the election. They were never told what the vote was. And so they made the shirt that they thought won the election. They didn't think it was going to be in violation of any dress code because there's no uniform that you have to wear at this school. So they wore this T-shirt. They said, this is the T-shirt should have won. This is what we're going to wear. And the principal then said, well, no, you're not going to wear that because it's a second T-shirt or it's not an official T-shirt. And they said, well, but this is a T-shirt should have won, and this is our protest. There can be expressions. This isn't an expression. It doesn't say get out of Iraq. It doesn't say anything like that. But it's a picture, and it was understood. The judge found that it was understood by the viewers, by the students, and by the schools. It was understood to be a protest. She found for us in that first prong of Saussure that that it was a protest. It was understood to be a protest by the students and by the school administrators. And she said that there was a question of fact having to do with whether there was a disturbance or not. But then when she went to the second prong of Saussure, then she said, well, definitively there was a safety issue.
And when is that cut off? I mean, if these were kindergartners, would it be the same case?
No, it would not. There is a continuum. You don't treat a 5-year-old the same as you treat a 14-year-old.
Well, it's a continuum. Where do you draw the line?
Well, it's difficult, but we know that a 14-year-old. Fourteen-year-old is a teenager.
Where do you draw the line between the 5-year-olds and the 14-year-olds?
The 14-year-old, every major religion has a cutoff of when adulthood begins. Sometimes it's 13.
What's our civic religion?
I'm just saying that.
Cutoff?
I'm saying as an analogy that you know there is a time when you are approaching adulthood.
I'm asking you when that is.
There isn't a definite time.
We
are dealing in.
Provide guidance to these school officials.
When you're dealing with 14-year-olds.
What about if we're dealing with 10-year-olds?
That wasn't this case, Your Honor. I mean, it might be different.
What if it were the case? What would you say? What would you say if it were the case?
If it were 10-year-olds in the circumstance, I would say it would be the same. If you're talking about kindergartners and the cases that have been before this court before.
How about 9-year-olds?
Your Honor, there is no clear line. What we're saying is we're dealing with 14-year-olds who are getting ready for high school, who are already questioning things in their environment. And we were never given the opportunity. This is a summary judgment motion. It might be different after trial if we're in front of you at that point, but this is a summary judgment motion. Shouldn't we have been able to bring this before a jury? Isn't it a jury that's supposed to decide?
Wouldn't you be laughed out of court by a jury? I would think so.
I don't think so.
You just have to see this.
I don't think so. I think that they would understand what was happening because this was a student person.
A 14-year-old couldn't do a better job than this.
Well, the person who drew it
is kindergartners.
Right, but that was the point when this was submitted as a T-shirt design. The point was we're going on to high school. They pick the student who was the least talented in drawing. They said, draw us a picture of Michael Brandt. He drew this picture, and they said, this is kind of funny. This is like
joke out of the First Amendment. I mean, you pick someone to deliver. Deliberately draw incompetently, and you produce this ugly and infantile picture, and you say this is protected by the First Amendment?
Yes, the T-shirt, the design was meant to just make fun. We're going on to high school. We're supposed to be big kids, and they had this drawing that was a childish drawing. But what happened after that was, of course, that they weren't allowed to challenge the election when they questioned it, and before the T-shirt was even produced, between February and April, they were told you can't produce this T-shirt. Because it's disobedient if you make this T-shirt. So they went ahead and made the T-shirt on April 1st.
Before you get into your rebuttal time, can you address the mootness point in the Massachusetts versus Oaks case that basically says that, you know, it's inappropriate to challenge when there's been an amendment or a repeal, and here we've got a repeal or an amendment actually of the language of the dress code.
They're wrong in arguing this, the defense, because we're...
In fact, the lawsuit was filed 6 months after the rule change.
It would be moot if we were asking for prospective relief, if we were asking that the school be enjoined from enforcing this rule, but that's not what we're asking. We're asking to have you rule on the legality of the rule as it existed in 2000.
Into the immunity trap. Mm-hmm. So you're not seeking any prospective relief. Is that correct?
We're not asking that this rule not be enforced. Well, the rules changed. We couldn't. So we're not asking prospectively.
Stimkar, what injunctive and declaratory relief did you ask the district court to give you?
We asked that the records be expunged. We asked that the school contact the high schools that these students had gone to see if records had gone there. We asked for declaratory relief. We asked that these two rules be declared unconstitutional.
Was there something put in their records about this?
The defendants were not either willing or able to produce records. They, throughout the discovery...
Were they subpoenaed? those
yes,
records
yes,
were subpoenaed?
Yes, they were. They were.
And did you file a motion to compel before the district court to find out whether or not there was anything even in the record?
The school was able to pull out records throughout the discovery period that they were found in boxes and in drawers. We should be able to have an order.
Yes, and these records they pulled out in boxes and drawers, were they the records of students who were in the eighth grade?
Yes, they went
and
back.
And was there anything in those records indicating they had been disciplined because of this thing?
There was nothing in writing, but what we're asking for is an order that should these records
yeah, but
appear.
Wait a minute. Yeah. If there was nothing in writing and records then follow the students, there would be nothing to get an injunction on.
We would have a right, I believe, to ask for an order that these records and this information not be passed on to any school. Whether there are records or not, as we said, the school was not able to produce any. But we don't know if they have gone.
But you did ask for the records.
Yes.
And they said that there weren't any in existence.
Right.
That indicated that they had been disciplined.
That they had not put it in writing. That's what they said.
Right.
We don't know what was communicated to other schools, and we don't know.
But you said you weren't seeking injunctive relief. Now you say you are seeking it.
I said that we were not seeking, in regard to the constitutionality of the rules, we're not seeking an injunction prohibiting the school from enforcing unconstitutional rules.
Do you want an injunction against disclosing this to anybody?
That's right.
Doesn't that limit their First Amendment rights?
An expungement of the students' records if they were wrongfully charged?
Well, there are no records, right? So what you want is an injunction against their disclosing to any school their opinion of the conduct of these kids. Is
right.
that what you want?
To pull back any records if any were sent?
There are no records, right? But there are no written records. But you still want, even if there are no written records, you still want an order preventing them from disclosing this incident to another school. Isn't
that's right.
that correct?
That's right.
Well, doesn't that infringe their First Amendment rights?
I don't think so.
Officials think these are terrible brats. Shouldn't they be permitted to communicate that opinion of theirs?
If the students' First Amendment rights were violated as a result of what happened in that last half of their eighth grade year, then that should not be communicated to high schools. They shouldn't be harmed by it. We're saying their constitutional rights are violated.
There are two separate points. They may have violated these people's rights, but they're still entitled to have an opinion about their conduct, aren't they?
A general opinion or something specifically about this event?
A newspaper article? Saying these are terrible brats, hope they're never admitted to college? Could they do that?
I don't think if they have violated the students' First Amendment rights that they can speak about that.
They can't speak about it. So the newspaper, could it be enjoined from publishing such an article?
Newspaper?
Suppose they write an article for the Chicago Tribune saying these are terrible brats, and you hear that the Tribune is about to publish the article, could you enjoin the Tribune?
I don't think we would be going against the Tribune. I think we would be going against the source of the information.
The because once it's published, you know, the cat is out of the bag.
I think having an order that the school administrators are not allowed to say that the students did anything wrong.
So they can't publish, or if the principal wrote a memoir or something about his life as a principal, he couldn't discuss this incident.
That's part of what an expungement is, I think. And we're asking that there be an expungement or an order saying that there are no records.
I've heard of orders of expungement. I've never heard of an order silencing a person from expressing an opinion.
We're asking that they not that be communicated to.
This argument is a little odd, doesn't it? You would silence a person formed an opinion.
I think you're expressing it more broadly than I would. I would not suppress someone's opinion or a newspaper article. What I'm saying is, this happens all the time in the criminal realm where records are expunged. This is a similar kind of thing.
It's one thing if there's a written record mm-hmm. to expunge mm-hmm. it. It's another thing to say, since there is no written record, you've got to keep your lips sealed. Now, see, I've never seen that before. I don't mean it's an illogical application of your thinking. It just seems surprising. That is, we know when records are expunged that there are people who may have seen those records. But we don't have as a kind of standard order of expungement that the records are expunged and anybody who has seen them or who authored them or what have you is forbidden to disclose their contents.
That could be part of an expungement order, especially in the school realm, that the records not be discussed. It's not just the written records that are expunged, but the information.
Discussed, yeah. All right. That it?
I've run out of time. I mean, there is more than I had to say, but
Well, we'll give you a minute.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dimkar. Mr. Louder? Ms. Louder, I'm sorry.
Okay. Judges, counsel, I think this case begins and ends with Mueller, where you said that the Tinker line of cases doesn't apply in elementary school. The elementary school is not a marketplace of ideas.
Well, eighth grade is not elementary. I realize it's called an elementary school, but eighth grade is middle school, so.
Well, it's not middle school here because in this school, Bobian, there are...
They are infantile, I understand, but eighth grade is not elementary school. Elementary school ends with fifth or sixth grade.
But these children are in school with kids from the age of three, first graders, second graders, up to eighth grade. And the marketplace of ideas is not really an appropriate description there. The more appropriate description is that we're trying to inculcate habits of civility and manners. That's what that's what an elementary school is trying to do, and that's what the elementary school tried to do here.
But I think the vulnerability of your case and what your opponent focuses on is that although surely the principal could have banned the shirt, and these terms, gifties and tards, are pretty repulsive, he could have done that, but he didn't actually give a reason, did he, for this? It looks as if he was just angry at having his authority questioned by these kids.
Actually, at the LSC meeting, the February LSC meeting, he told the people there, including one of the plaintiffs, that he was concerned for the safety of the kids. There had been a lot of incidents. 1 week before the kids first wore the shirt, there was the incident in the park with the shoving, gifties, tards being yelled, and kids being chased to the train. This is a local school where most of the local kids are regular education kids, and the gifted kids come from outside of the neighborhood. So there's tension there already.
Well, what wasn't the shirt banned? Didn't he ban the students from wearing the shirts even before that word was added to it, before the gifties was written on the back? So in other words, he banned it when all it had was that front drawing.
Actually, what he told them when he met with them, when he first learned that they were planning to make a shirt, was that they couldn't wear any shirt that they sold only to gifted students. So he was trying to get them not to be exclusive and not to fan the flames of this conflict between the gifted and regular students.
So in effect, he was saying an election's an election. It's over. We move forward as a class.
Pretty much what our Supreme Court said in the second-to-last election.
Well, I gather your view is he was attempting to inculcate some sense of how democracy works in elections. Like, you hold an election, when the election's over, you abide by the decision, you don't splinter off, fracture off, and do your own thing. You're part of a greater community.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if that's what he was doing under the test that we do use, at least for elementary or for at least for non-secondary school students, that would be enough, wouldn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, one of the positions counsel argues vigorously is that the jury should have been the one to determine whether the principal had a legitimate basis for believing there was hostility between the two student groups. Why shouldn't the jury have made that determination?
Well, the district court did find that that was a contested issue of fact, but she found that it wasn't clearly established in 2003 that elementary students had a right to political protest. And the case ends there.
Well, that's the immunity issue, but I thought you also were defending the validity of his action.
I can defend it, but I don't think I have to.
Well, maybe you do with that expungement thing kicking around, right?
Why don't you try? What's your best case on the first prong of the Saussure analysis? Was there a constitutional violation or wasn't there?
No, I don't believe that there was, because I believe that elementary schools are in the business of inculcating habits and manners of civility, and they have an obligation and a right to try to teach kids the boundaries of appropriate discourse.
So do I understand you then to say that what the district court thought were genuine issues of triable fact are in fact not genuine issues because they're not relevant to the basic inquiry?
I believe that she didn't really consider what the responsibility of an elementary school is to teach kids manners and civility. As this court said in Mueller, you know, one of the things elementary school teachers have to do is teach kids to sit down and be quiet and not be rude.
Well, this language, inappropriate, don't you think that language, wouldn't some people find a fair amount of speech protected by the First Amendment inappropriate?
Some people would, but in this case, these plaintiffs were well aware that what they were doing was inappropriate, because the principal told them at the LSC meeting, he told them in their class. Michael Brandt, the named plaintiff, said he didn't put his gifties T-shirt on at the beginning of the first day they were going to wear it because he was afraid he was going to be suspended. So he well knew it was inappropriate.
So you're saying that even though the language is broad in this fact scenario, it wasn't broad because the students understood its meaning?
Yes, I believe so, and I think your Weimerslug case supports that, where the principal sent a letter to the parents and students explaining what the Hamlin Gate and not lawyering by the Hamlin Gate meant.
Was it just the graduating class that voted on the shirt?
Yes, Your Honor. But they were planning to wear it at school and to the school trips and different times. If you don't have any other questions, I'd ask you to affirm the granting qualified immunity to the defendants.
Thank you, Ms. Louder. So, Ms. Dimkar, your time ran out, but we'll give you another minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the election, what Judge Ripple had mentioned about the election, it was in dispute. They were never told what the vote was. There was a re-vote, and the kids said, wait a minute, you know, why does it have to be a re-vote? They weren't told the vote count the first time. They weren't told the vote count the second time. That's very different than what happened in our national election. And the students are supposed to be challenging that kind of thing. So I said, wait a minute, what is the election? What is the vote? They weren't told, and they suspected that their shirt won the first time. So that's what started this whole thing.
You think they had a constitutional right to know what the first vote was or know why there had to be a runoff?
Yes.
And you think they had a constitutional right for the school system to tell them that?
I think that they had a First Amendment right to protest the not being told that, the lack of knowledge, that they had a right to know that. And this is the kind of thing we want them to be able to do when they're adults, is to question things at the workplace, question things when you think something's going wrong with the government.
Are there any limits to the way they could have protested this?
Are there limits? Yeah, they could not have been violent about it. This was a passive protest.
Any other limits besides the fact that they couldn't be violent? I mean, well, I guess we'll all agree they couldn't burn a place down. But, I mean, were there other limits to what the principal could expect them to do in protest to the way you ran a school?
Well, I guess rather than dealing with hypotheticals, Your Honor, I guess what did the students do here? They wore a T-shirt. It was a passive protest. They wore a T-shirt to their class. They didn't disturb anybody. There's no indication that anybody was disturbed by it.
Did they ever communicate with the principal, either verbally or in writing?
Yes. Yes, they tried to talk to him. They went to, Michael Brandt went to his office. Principal refused to talk to him. In fact, during this entire time, the principal would not meet with them. He had Mary Clancy and Christine Laughlin, the vice principals, meet with the students. He refused to meet with them. They did everything. They started a petition drive, and they got the other students to say, we don't care if you make this shirt. They went to the local school council.
Did they ever submit a petition to the authorities?
They submitted their petitions to the local school council, and they made a presentation to the local school council. And we put in an affidavit from a member of the local school council.
Your position, isn't it, that even if the vote had been announced and everything and so on, that they had a First Amendment right to protest, right? You can certainly protest the result of an election. You can say a terrible mistake was made. So suppose they say they announce the vote, it's clear cut, there are no irregularities, et cetera, et cetera. But are you saying, nevertheless, they would still have this First Amendment right to wear the T-shirt in protest against the election result?
I'm saying that would not have been in violation of any dress code, but I don't know that it would be a First Amendment right because it was a protest to a rigged election.
I don't understand you. Surely adults can protest an election result, right?
Right.
They can say the wrong person won.
Right.
And I thought you thought these eighth graders had the same constitutional rights that adults did.
I don't think they have exactly the same rights. No, I wouldn't say that. As I said, I think it's
so
a graduated thing.
They could only protest irregularities. They couldn't protest the result of the election as such.
I think that they could, Judge. I mean, maybe I misspoke a few minutes ago. The case that's before you now, it has to do with protesting the election and the irregularities. But, you know, I think that they would have had a right to protest other things. So, and it was a passive protest. This wasn't – there's no indication that this disturbed anybody in the school. I do want to comment on one thing, Judge Posner. You said that Giftes is disgusting. Isn't it a jury issue? I mean, Giftes, they're not making –
Are juries going to run schools? Is that your idea?
No.
I'm not saying
that, you know,
you're saying these kids don't like this, don't like that, don't like the other thing, and then a jury decides whether they're entitled and get damages and all sorts of things because the jury thinks, yeah, that's the way to run a school. Giftes, tards, all that stuff. That's great, right?
Well, I think
you shift the responsibility for running schools from school authorities to juries.
Well, Judge, the question is the word Giftes vulgar, lewd, offensive, profane? Who's to decide that?
It's insulting to the non-gifted, right?
I don't think it is.
This day and age you have this kind of division in the school. Sounds like, you know, 50 years ago.
And it was the gifted student.
How do kids feel who are not gifted? Were they the slow learners, the retards?
Well, I guess, you know, would Judge, if you had a situation where a student wore a shirt that said University of Chicago Scholars Program or International Science Fair winner, are you saying that they can't wear a shirt like that because that's bragging? That's sort of what the defendants are saying. You're not supposed to brag.
I think a school could forbid that, of course. Why not?
But some of these are programs that the school promotes. They have academic bowl and they have winners, and then the kids wear shirts saying I won.
You can promote a program and yet want to discourage bragging. See, this is, look, what you're saying is you and the jury know more about running the school than the school authorities.
No, we're not
you
saying...
You and these little kids with their silly T-shirt are the people who are going to, you and the jurors and these kids are going to run this school.
When you're dealing with, we're not bringing day-to-day decisions before the court. We're bringing a constitutional violation that lasted.
Of course, you're bringing day-to-day because every time a kid doesn't like something in his school, he'll protest, and then the next thing you know, you're in front of a jury.
This was a protracted situation.
Anything that is protested, any protest, in your view, is prima facie constitutionally protected. So there might be kids, they don't like elections. They like dictators, right? They've read about ancient Rome, and they've read about a lot of other things. They decide they like dictatorship. They like elections, so they protest the election. And you say that's prima facie constitutionally protected. And if the school tries to crack down, then it becomes a jury issue whether that protest should have been permitted. So the school completely loses control over discipline under the rubric of protest. Every time there's a protest, there's a prima facie violation of the First Amendment, and you get your jury.
I don't think every case is going to be brought to the court.
I don't understand. You suppose they protest, they wear armbands because they don't like the ketchup in the school cafeteria. They think it's disgusting and fatal. So they wear black armbands, and the school says, no, you can't do that. You're disrupting the good order of the school by wearing black armbands to protest the ketchup. And you say, we'll let a jury decide, right?
We had an expert.
Answer my question. Would that
it's
create a jury
It's possible that you
issue?
Would. Because
it's possible it would, precisely.
Because we had an expert.
Precisely.
We had an expert who was willing to come in, and that's not, you know, we didn't get that far, who would have said, developmentally, this is what students deal with.
Absolutely. Of course, you get people who say, you get the grandchildren of the progressive educators, and they'll say, kids should be encouraged from the age of 2 to have independent minds and protest everything they don't like, right? And then a jury will say, well, we think that's a good educational philosophy or a bad educational philosophy. And if it's a good educational philosophy, then the defendants have to pay damages to the parents.
Well, the opposite extreme is that we would raise robots.
That's right.
Kids.
That's the opposite extreme.
Right.
You're defending one lunatic extreme, and you're pointing correctly the fact that there is an opposite lunatic extreme. Your extreme is anarchy in a school where juries run schools because two-year-olds are protesting their recess, their milk break or something. And then you point out, yeah, you could go stupidly you could go to the other extreme, absolutely.
And once again, we're not talking about two-year-olds, we're talking about 14-year-olds.
No,
and at what
your
point...
Your logic, it has no limits. You have no limits. You've got the ketchup protest, you've got the 10-year-olds. We can push it down toward 2, right?
I don't think you can go that far.
Stop at six.
There's no
school
cutoff.
Discipline will be permissible until the first grade. And from then on, it's juries who run schools.
Well, I don't think you give a student when they graduate from high school a certificate and says, now you have your constitutional rights. They have to be exercising and thinking about things all along the way. And if they question it, maybe this was a teachable moment. Maybe the ACLU could have been brought in, or the Department of Law, or somebody to say, okay, is this a First Amendment right? To make it a teachable moment. And that wasn't done. It was squelched. The protest was squelched. Because the principal made it an obedience issue. And the thing that we really haven't gotten to in this whole argument is that there was a safety issue that was fabricated. And do school administrators get qualified immunity when they falsify information and when they engage in hyperbole? Because that's what happened here. There was no safety issue. And we presented to the district court deposition transcripts from the school psychologist, from the head of safety and security, local school council member John Oster, his affidavit, the crisis intervention team report. The judge had all that. And isn't there a dispute of fact? I've read your opinion, Judge Posner, in the Lacks case, and so how little factual dispute there has to be for there to be a denial of summary judgment motion. And in this case, there were chasms and canyons between what the students said happened and what the school said happened. And summary judgment should have been denied, and they should not have gotten qualified immunity.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Dimkar and Ms. Slaughter.
Thank you.